Good afternoon, Roadie Nation. Feels good to be back in the studio. I have not been back for a live taping in the studio in the past couple weeks. So, Mark Radigan here. Happy to be back on WRIU 90.3 FM for another episode of Mark's Remarks. And so today, this week, we have a team that, if you've been a follower of Mark's Remarks, you're quite familiar with. I've had the men's track and field team on this show quite a few times. Had Mason Brubaker as my pole vaulter buddy come on. Chris Taverone, a champion thrower for the team. And so now, I wanted to cover a little bit more of my bases with track and field. I wanted to get a sprinter, a runner, someone that's more of the quintessential track and field that we all love, the stuff that we love having to watch during the Olympics and everything. So today, joining me in the studio is senior captain of the men's track and field team, Liam Creeley. Liam, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Excited to be here. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Like, I've been very much looking forward to this. I love talking about track and field. I would say that it's one of the more underappreciated programs on campus, especially considering how successful the team has been in recent years. I mean, just this year, it capped off, what was it, your fourth straight Atlantic 10 championships in indoor?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, four straight.
I mean, that's insane. Like, when you're talking about programs that are successful but just don't get nearly as much of the plaudits, I mean, the first team you got to think of is men's track and field, and you are one of the main reasons why for that, with just, I mean, your own personal accolades that we will get to in due time. But, I mean, Liam, as I do with every show, I want to start off talking about you and how you got to this position. I mean, just tell me where it all began for you when you started getting involved in track and field.
Yeah, so my story goes way back. As a kid, my first love was baseball. Played baseball as a kid from probably 4 years old to 16, 17. But as I started playing, you know, Legion baseball, getting more competitive, you know, the level increased, and I realized that kind of my talent on the field was, you know, especially my speed. Playing like center field, batting leadoff, like I would get on base. My job was to steal second and third on the first and second pitches of the next at bat. And then, you know, I just got to the age where that didn't excite me as much, and I knew that I was fast, so I just decided to go be fast where fast people are needed. And that was definitely on the track team. So I started there my freshman year of high school, quit baseball going into my junior year. And that's when I had my first full season of indoor track, outdoor track, and then running AAU track for my high school coach during the summer. Then my senior year doing the same thing, started with, you know, training during the distance runners, cross country seasons, trying to get ready. Had a good indoor season, thought I was finally making a name for myself, qualifying for states individually on my relays and stuff with my good buddies from high school. And then obviously that got cut pretty short from COVID. Had a bit of time off, missed some big meets because of it. But I was thankful enough that during that summer, during COVID, me and a lot of my high school teammates that were on that same club team with my coach, he kind of welcomed us to come out there with a lot of other kids. And it was honestly one of like the best experiences of my life. Like, it was kind of just a great way to like get away from everything else that was happening in the world. Like, we could just go out to the track for like 3 hours a day, be like best friends, and like get in shape, like have something to get ready for, like something to look forward to, because there just wasn't much to have as like a goal back then. And you know, we had a meet late in August in Florida that we could go to, and it was kind of like my last ditch effort to kind of make a name for myself to run in college. There were only two schools that, you know, had really offered me any chance of coming to run, and that was URI being one of them, and then Rider University in New Jersey. So that's where I really came from. And then, you know, came in here as a freshman. I didn't have any scholarship offers. I just liked this school a lot on my visit here. I felt welcomed by Coach Copeland at the time. You know, he promised me that if I came here and, you know, I did what I needed to do, worked hard enough, like that it was possible to make it. And just came in the fall, came to practice every day, and told myself I'd keep coming until he told me not to, and thankfully that day never came. And you know, I was super thankful for that time. I learned a lot about myself that first fall. It really made me into a hard worker, and you know, just kind of never looked back since then.
And I mean, that's just like seeing guys go into like the sporting scene and stuff, where it's like, you know, you have talent, like, you know that you want to contribute, but it's that hardworking aspect that really makes or breaks a lot of college athletes. And just like to have the confidence to be able to go to a school like URI, a team that has been successful in the past, particularly in track and field, and be like, you know what, like, I'm going to walk on, I'm going to make these coaches, I'm going to give them a reason to give me a chance. And then clearly you were able to do that. I mean, like, the success down the line beyond that speaks for itself. And I mean, just like, Coach Copeland is one of the most storied coaches in URI history. I mean, just like, what were some of, like, some things that you remember about him, or just some of the experiences that you had that, like, really stood out to you running under him in, during that first year?
Yeah, I mean, running that year for anybody was tough because of, you know, the differences in the lifestyle and the training style that we had. But I loved my freshman year running under Coach Copeland. It was very similar to my high school style, like a lot of running, like a lot of hard work, you know, had to really find my strengths. But he was vicious, man. Like, he would make us do some crazy stuff, you know, give you a lot of hurt. Like, his background, being in the military, running at UConn, he was a very tough guy. You know, you'd go out to the outdoor track on a cold, rainy November afternoon, and he would hit you with the most running you've done in your life, and he would tell you bye-bye, and then next time you would see him was at the end of the workout, and that's how it kind of was all year. You know, doing hills, running in the rain. He was a guy that really knew how to try to get the most out of you. Although it didn't work for everybody, he could really make kids into hard workers, and I think that's why he had a lot of success of having a lot of championships, because if you bought in, you were going to become one of the toughest, strongest kids in the conference, regardless of your natural talent. And I think that a lot of kids flourished under that kind of philosophy.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems so. And then, I mean, like, you see just the massive banner for the records and the just the championship teams that were under his tutelage. And I mean, it's just like his pedigree seems to speak for itself. And it seems that, like, the character and the way that he carried himself translated to the athletes that he had under him. Because, I mean, he just continued to produce successful athlete after successful athlete. And so then, as your time has gone on, you're joining in as a walk-on. You're still kind of operating with that chip on your shoulder with something to prove. And so then, just going into, like, your sophomore and junior seasons, as you started to make more strides and started to cement yourself, particularly as a part of the relay team, because, I mean, it seems that as a sprinter, that seems to be one of the teams where you get a boatload of your success, particularly at the New England Championships. Yeah. As time had gone on and you started to become... feel as more of one, more of a member of the team. Just how did the experiences start to shift for you, and how did your, I guess, let's say, like, your mental state or your confidence get impacted as well?
Yeah. So I remember, like, the first time that my mentality here really switched was my freshman year. I'd say kind of early April, like, they kind of make their final roster, like, you know, who's probably going to the big meets and stuff like that. And when I was still around at that time, like, you know, I knew I had a role, but then I started hearing the kids that are, you know, seniors, even fifth years, like, talking about the relay teams, like you were talking about, and they're, like, bringing up names of, like, who can do it, like, we need people to, like, step up. And, like, I remember them saying my name for the first time, like, my teammates recognizing that they think that I could do it, you know, like, step onto the 4x100 or the 4x400 at, you know, conference or the New England Championships. And when I heard that, like, that just, like, triggered a switch in me that, like, decided that I had to be a part of that and that I couldn't let them down. And then that year we went to the Atlantic 10s. We got second in the 4x1 with me on it, third in the 4x4 with me on it, went to New England's, ran the 4x1, got first. And that was, like, my first gold medal at a championship, like, of my life. I think even from high school, I hadn't won much. And from that point on, like, I was on the 4x1 for my first collegiate outdoor meet. And still to this day, I'm on it, you know, trying to chase bigger and better things, go to the NCAA East Regional, hope for the NCAA Championships. We got a really good squad. So from that point till now, you know, even with how many different guys we've had to plug into those different teams, like, we've always found a way for those to kind of be our strong suits. and have just never looked back since then, and always want that to be a part of what I'm doing here.
And so that first 4x1 championship, that participating in New England's, I mean, I have to imagine that the nerves had to have been a little high, being, because obviously you've got the admiration and respect from your teammates, that helps a lot. But at the same sense, you've said it yourself, that this was not a position that you were in fairly often during your high school career. So to get to that point, to where you're competing for a championship like that, and then ultimately winning, I have to imagine that that feeling was, that initial, that first time, was beyond anything you felt before.
Yeah, definitely. That was my last race of that season. We had gone into that race with some uncertainty. I was running the second leg. Me and our third leg had basically never practiced together. We were against one of our biggest rivals in that race. And being able to beat them with the team that we had in the conditions that it was under for my first, like, championship ever was more than anything I could have asked for at the time.
And so then moving forward, like, throughout the upcoming seasons, both indoor and outdoor, after having gotten that first championship and gotten that, like, taste for glory and everything, how did that change your approach, if at all, for seasons going forward? Because at that point now, you've got, like, that positive reinforcement that, okay, the work that I've been putting in is now paying off. Like, that chip on the shoulder is being a walk-on, like, sort of the burden's being lifted in a sense, because now you've got that confidence saying, all right, like, I deserve to be here. Like, I've contributed to a championship-winning team. Did that at all, like, change how you approached different seasons, or did it all change, like, how you thought about yourself as a part of the team moving forward?
I think so. You know, my sophomore year, after coming back off of walking on, it definitely made me feel like I had more of a sense of belonging. Like, I knew from day one that, like, I was coming in and I was the guy that was going to be here all the way through May. And we had brought in some other really good talent that year. And I knew, like, at that point, it wasn't to replace me. It was guys for me to work with and win with. And I think that sense of comfort kind of took that weight off my shoulders and let me be myself. And my sophomore year was a really good year for me. My first meet that year, I had a huge PR, super happy about it. Had some continued success through the Atlantic 10 championships that year. Was kind of keeping my name at the top. Like, my freshman year, I ran the 200 at the championships, got fourth. Ran it indoors my sophomore year, got fourth. And it was kind of those things, more so than anything, you know, at practice with the team, that, like, really made me feel like I belong. Like, if I can keep my name at the top, like, you know, my goal can go from my freshman year being to make the team to my sophomore year, you know, trying to get on that podium, and just that being the goal, to, like, just keep cracking at it to keep my name at the top. And I think chasing that, mixed with the comfortability of me knowing that I can do it, just lets me flourish a lot under what we have now.
And so you called yourself before, when we were talking before the interview, you called yourself, like, a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And as a sprinter, I feel like that skill set can allow you to participate in a number of different events. I mean, outside of the relay, because the success there speaks for itself, what are some of your other experiences that you've had in your career thus far across different events for Rhode Island that you would say were, like, memorable, whether in the sense that you tried it and you loved it, or you tried some for the first time and it was just like, yeah, no, I'm never doing that again?
Yeah, I think some of the coolest things about my time here is, like, how well represented I am across different events for myself. Like, on our all-time top 10 list for, like, the 60 meter, the shortest race we can run here, I believe I'm still number 7 after this indoor season. But then if you look at, like, the distance medley relay, which is probably the most far out there event for a sprinter, it's 3 distance guys of 1 sprinter. The sprinter really doesn't even matter on it, just kind of there. I was lucky enough to be in, like, such a good group of guys at the time where I got my name on a school record. So I think that, like I told you, I'm a jack of all, master of none. You know, it's just cool to have my name in the mix. Like, whenever, like, somebody's needed for, you know, any event, like, I feel like I can always help out in some sort of way. And, you know, no matter what I'm doing, I know that I'm more than capable of doing it.
And so then that feeling of having your name put down on a school record like that, having been a walk-on and really having to bust your ass to be able to get to this position, I can't imagine that it's a feeling that can be replicated by many other things, being able to be like, okay, you are one of the best at this particular thing in program history. And considering how storied of a program that you're a part of, how must that feel?
It's great. I mean, I think there's only a few things in our sport that can equal that, like, you know, personal achievements, like becoming a leader. But, you know, things like school records and championships, they kind of sit atop of the list for things that I can accomplish myself. And to at least get one of those was, I mean, now I got both. You know, I got the team titles and I have a school record. You know, I felt that at that point, like, I can almost be a little selfish and focus on myself and really try to, you know, put my last stamp on it by doing something that says Liam Creeley. And, you know, hopefully one day that happens. But, you know, there's not many things that felt much better than that day. You know, I felt super accomplished at that time. It was definitely like a full circle moment. Like, doing that same race in high school and doing the same thing, getting, you know, a school record and then coming to do it in college was pretty surreal.
And you just mentioned there, being named, being a leader or being recognized as a leader is another accomplishment that comes close to that. And your journey, similar to others who I've had on this show, going from walk-on to then being named a team captain is incredible. It's like you called it a fairy tale before we hopped on. And I mean, just everybody's initial reaction to that is usually sort of the same, but the circumstances can be quite different. I mean, just when the coaches informed you that you were being named captain and just your teammates letting you know, like, that respect, just like, what, how was that for you? And like, how did you take all of that in when it officially happened?
Yeah. So it happened the beginning of my junior year in that fall. It's kind of funny because at the time, like, they did it at the end of one of our, you know, weight rooms. We all get together as a team, kind of, you know, have a little team talk and whatnot. And at that point of the year, they needed to kind of like promote some of the leaders in the squad to, you know, being true captains. I believe at the time it was me, Chris, who you've had on, and then some other kids as well. And when they said that in front of the team, like, they pulled me aside and told me, like, you know, how would it feel to be a team captain? And I told them, like, it would be like the greatest honor, like, I've had in my life yet, like, athletically. But then when they say it to the team, like, obviously kids come and congratulate me, but they're like, we already thought you were, because the kind of guy that, like, I just think I am around here. My sophomore year, we only really had one leadership figure. So I kind of just implemented myself in there, tried to, you know, keep kids level-headed, keep them working hard and things like that. And I think that's why I kind of gained that reputation of, like, people already seeing me as a leader, and that, like, notion of just being a captain didn't really change anything for people. Obviously, it felt great to me, and, like, it made me feel accomplished. But deep down, like, I think it's just the person that I was made to be, to kind of be here and, you know, enjoy success with other people. Like, one of my favorite parts about being on this team is, like, you know, I'm yet to win an individual gold medal, but, like, some of the most fun times have been, like, living vicariously through other people that, like, I know I've had a positive impact on, and them, like, finally seeing their individual success. And, like, that's totally fine with me. Like, if I never win, like, at least the people I care about have. And, you know, I love that part of the sport. So being named a captain was great, but it didn't change much for me.
That's quite admirable. I feel like that's like what you would want as a coach to see someone that you're naming a captain, to be like that humility and that, like, understanding of, like, this isn't going to impact, like, how I am. I mean, you're just going to continue doing what you're doing that led you to be named captain in the first place. Because, I mean, the next thing I was going to ask was, like, how did that moniker impact you in any way, like, moving forward? But, I mean, it seems as if that it really just didn't, that you just continued to carry on as you were beforehand, and that your teammates still looked at you the same way. The fact that half of your teammates were like, oh, we just figured you were a captain already is pretty cool. And I have to say that, like, the culture that's been established in that program seems to be exceptionally strong. Yeah. Like, a very strong sense of brotherhood, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Like, we live together, we're best friends. Like, it's just how it's always been since the day I got here. Like, whether it be the older kids before or us, we've all been the same way. Like, we go to practice and we have a blast. Like, we got a lot of great athletes now. Like, we probably have one of the best, if not the best team, like, this school has ever seen. But, like, at the end of the day, like, we can put it all aside when it's not time to, you know, be toxic and competitive, and like we all just like have a laugh and like, you know, things like traveling together, like we have the time of our lives. We like literally would like not want to do it anywhere else with any other people, I feel like. So it's great.
And so that kind of perfectly segues into what I wanted to talk about next, which is just the level and the status of this program. Because like I said during the introduction, that a lot of people, I don't believe, truly understand and appreciate how successful this program is. And I mean, you look at the accolades of this program, four straight Atlantic 10 championships indoor. I'm pretty sure you're approaching for maybe four straight outdoor championships as well. Yeah. And I remember that's what when I had Chris Tav on the show, he was talking about the same thing where he was like, that's what we're aiming for. We're aiming for four. He wants the four for four for his freshman to senior time here. And obviously you guys achieved that. But I'm curious from your perspective, being one of those few athletes that were able to successfully make it from walk-on to a senior position on this program, what are some of the factors that you feel contribute to the team being that successful when a lot of factors like finances and fan appreciation and revenue and just talent pool competing with the bigger Power 5 schools maybe working against you at the same time?
Yeah, I think we're definitely like a super unique program. Like, I think it would be very hard to find other teams that have succeeded in the conditions that we have. I don't think we have the utmost amount of funding. We don't have the facilities. I mean, if you put it straight, we just don't have the facilities necessary for a successful team, but we find a way. And it's really special how we continue to make it happen. Like, we just kind of, our coaches just do a great job of finding diamonds in the rough, and I think that's because they never tell somebody no. Like, if you want to try to come and be on our team, like, you can come out here in September and try to work with us. Like, it may only work for a day. If it takes them a day to realize maybe you don't have it, you know, that's how it goes. But, you know, there's a kid like me in every year, in every class, that will, you know, just come and want to work their hardest, came in good shape, and prove that they can do it. You know, we had a kid like that this year, Nick Morrison. He went to the Atlantic 10 Championships indoors and, you know, had a surprise finish. I think he got fourth or fifth in the 400, and he, you know, maybe he's been running track for 2 years, and he just, you know, figured he wanted to come out and do it. And I think it's things like that that, like, really boost our program a lot. And then I just think also the camaraderie. Like, kids just come on visits here, and they see us together. They see us at practice. We go do things with them, like go to a basketball game, go to dinner, go to lunch. And, like, they just love it, and, like, they can tell that, like, they could be friends with us for 4 years here and, you know, be our best friends, training partners, whatever it may be. And I think that regardless of, like, facilities, financials, like, that gives a big pull to kids, feeling like a family, knowing that if they come here, they'll make friends, win. I mean, like, they can't really ask for much more. Like, if it's about the money, like, maybe it'll come eventually, or there's a place that'll give you that right away. That's fine, but, you know, if people buy into what we have, I find it very rare that they don't enjoy it or, you know, leave or anything. It's just a really great program to be a part of.
Do you think that if circumstances were different and that facilities were different, like that of like another, like a UConn or like a Boston College or something, if they were present at URI, do you think that the level of success that the program would have right now would be like, what do you think the difference would be? Like, because it seems like right now, considering the amount of success that you guys have had in the Atlantic 10, given the state of what is at your disposal, I have to imagine that if you had facilities similar to that of like the bigger schools in New England, for example, you'd have guys competing at NCAAs at minimum.
Yeah.
What's your sort of thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll speak for sprinters especially. You know, New England's a tough place to be for what we do. You know, it could be cold, windy, conditions are not great until later on in our season, but facilities are one thing that can change that, you know. Like, I think one of the premier programs up here for the past few years had kind of been Boston University, and they have one of the maybe the best indoor facility in the world for indoor racing. But, you know, I don't think there's much that separates them from us. Like, I think we've got just as good, if not better, athletes. I think we have phenomenal coaches. Like, if you gave us a facility like that, that could be very advantageous to, you know, race planning, hosting meets, you know, those kind of things can go a long way. And I think that, you know, if we had something like that in an outdoor track, not that we aren't already one of the best teams up here, but I think we could be like the premier program of the Northeast, because we prove it, you know, every year. We hope to keep doing that because we want to be, you know, the biggest program up here. We look at the rankings all the time of like the Northeast region, and we see us in like that top three, top two, you know, UConn, the Harvards, those kind of things. And like, we think we belong with them, you know. So it just takes kids to buy in when they come here, thinking that like we do belong in that group.
And for those listening that are curious about all of this, recently, toward the end of 2023, it was announced that the University of Rhode Island is getting a grant in the region of, I believe, like $68 million to help fund renovations and new additions to the athletic quarter down at the bottom of campus. And that's going to include renovations to Mackle, renovations to Meade Stadium, renovations to the soccer complex, the baseball complex, the softball complex, and building a brand new outdoor track. When that actually all occurs is anybody's guess, because just with the way that things go and the timetables of projects of this nature, it can vary from year to year. New coaches could come in, programs could change, and the need for those updates could vary as well. And that was something that you and I were sort of discussing beforehand, is that when you look at these sorts of facilities and you look at like the way that things are carrying on, how do we know that the momentum that this program has right now is going to continue for the next 5-10 years? Because, I mean, things are super volatile. I mean, like, you look at basketball. Basketball was competing in March Madness in 2018 and 19, and now, right now, it's in the midst of a rebuild, and it's working their way back up to get back to that echelon. But that's what it is with college sports. There's a lot of highs and there's a lot of lows. So that's going to be the interesting thing, to me at least, for what everything is going to look like, because I know that an outdoor track will be huge and obviously will attract so much more talent for this program as well. And even indoors, URI can't host indoor Atlantic 10 championships anymore. They hosted one in 2022. Was it 2022?
Last indoor
championship was last year, and it was the last time URI would ever be able to host it until a banked track is implemented, because that's the new standard now. It's a banked track. And with the way a lot of these tournaments work, the previous champion is usually the one that hosts it. And so now URI, a team that's perpetually winning indoor championships, is losing out on a great deal of revenue and a great deal of exposure because they can't host tournaments like that. So I feel like that now, obviously, getting the grant proves that the athletic department's aware of this and knows that this is something that needs to be looked at, and they are working exceptionally hard to actually make that happen. We had the athletic director on the show a few months ago when this plan was announced, and they talked about a little bit about just what the steps are being taken to improve that, and we've seen the first part of it with the basketball facilities and so on. So I believe it's only a matter of time before those updates are finalized and they're actually put into practice. But the only caveat with that, to me at least, is that once those are done, what's the state of each program that they're going to be now becoming a part of? Are you going to be seeing URI men's track and field at that point, 8-9 times straight champions of the Atlantic 10, or still in that conversation? I think they will, just considering the way that the coaches have built that program and the culture that's been established. But that's more or less the question is, will these renovations that will make URI even more of a well-rounded athletic institution than it already is come at the same point of success for some of these teams? But, I mean, kind of moving on into the next sort of thing I wanted to talk about that ties into this is the coaches that you have at your disposal. Because coaches can obviously change, like, throughout. Like, you've obviously had a new coaching staff come in since Coach Copeland retired. And I want to hear more about your experiences with this new current coaching staff, because you've seen a lot of success under them. And I've heard plenty of different accounts from a number of different players just about how much the staff really drives you guys and pushes you guys to succeed at levels that a lot of you guys may not have thought you were capable of. So, I mean, just as one of the captains, just tell me about your personal experiences with the coaching staff so far.
Yeah, so I talked a bit about Coach Copeland before, but, you know, now Coach Trent Baldzell is our head coach. And then for me specifically, Coach Brian Doyle, he's our sprints coach and distance coach. And the transition was incredible. I mean, Cope and him probably couldn't have any different philosophies or any more different philosophies when it comes to training. It was like two polar opposites. Cope would just make you run until you were the strongest person you could imagine. And then Coach Doyle just, you know, tries to keep you fresh, tries to keep your body feeling good. When you're running hard. You know, a lot of focus on our speed, things like that. And I think it's worked very well for a lot of athletes. We've had a lot of kids come in, you know, from high school and come under his system and improve drastically. I think we've seen like a large influx in like all-time top 10 performances in sprint events, and you know, people being top of the conference in sprint events since he came. But it's not just him as like a guy giving us workouts, because he's also like just a super incredible guy. Like, everyone loves him, like talking to him, like he like makes jokes with all of us. You know, he obviously, we're around him all the time, so he's basically like one of us. And another great thing is like he's just there for us. Like he understands that, like, you know, you're gonna have like off weeks. You know, big thing about him is like he periodizes our training a lot, so there's gonna be times in the year where like we just don't have that super high ceiling, and he gets that. And like sometimes we don't, and when we don't get that, he's kind of there for us to like reinforce that when it matters, like it's gonna be there. And I think that's like something that I haven't always had with previous coaches, is like he's very supportive, you know, emotionally, socially, and athletically. And I think that's just like super, super important. He makes sure to, you know, schedule meetings with people throughout the years, like keep up to date with their goals, with how they're doing, you know, if they think they need to change anything. And I mean, as an athlete, that's kind of just like all you could ask for. Obviously, a coaching system doesn't work for everybody, but a coach doing their best to make it work for everybody, you can't really ask for much more.
I mean, that seems like that's the backbone of the culture that's been established, because I mean, it starts with the coaches. If you want to establish a winning culture of brotherhood and true camaraderie, it starts at the top with how you treat the guys that are beneath you, that yeah, that are on your program, on your team, a part of your program. And it seems that he's got that well-rounded understanding of what it means to be an athlete, because yeah, being a student athlete is one of the most difficult things that someone of our age group can possibly do, particularly those that are studying exceptionally difficult majors. I mean, take Chris Trav. I mean, yeah, engineering major, and with the goals that he has set out for himself to be able to do that is like mind-boggling.
I lived with him sophomore year. That kid, he was in the library till 2 a.m., 3 a.m. I mean, there's not like a harder working kid that I've ever met than him. So,
but it's those types of personalities, yeah, that you see on like that you see on these teams, where like if you're a good coach, you understand, yeah, that all right, these kids are driven not just by athletics, but by their educational pursuits as well.
They're people, yeah.
They're people, exactly. And so then that's the best thing about a program like this, where it's like you can tell from top to bottom that everyone is geared towards the same goal and they think about the same things. Yeah. And also, kind of from what you were talking about, it seems that his like approach to training and his approach to practices takes more of like a sports science approach.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's because it seems that like Coach Copeland really making an effort to get you guys to be as strong as possible, yeah, like peak. But Coach Doyle, it seems as if there's more of like a focus on, all right, how do each of your individual bodies respond, yeah, to certain pressures, and how do they respond to the amount of rigor that's being put on? Because it's like whenever you're working out, you may not feel totally fulfilled, like, oh, you can do more after a workout,
yeah,
but this is something that like Mason Brubaker told me. He's like, when you're working out, you want to be able to go again tomorrow.
Yeah.
You need your body to remain fresh. And that's an approach that I feel like a lot of coaches nowadays, with the evolution of more modern sports medicine and everything, like you're starting to think more critically about that. And that's, I feel like, also another driving factor behind how successful the team is, because it doesn't seem like, from my understanding, that the team gets injured fairly often. Mm-hmm. And if it is, I can only imagine it's kind of minor. I mean, is that, am I sort of Am I jumping to conclusions there with that one?
I mean, that's just super individualized. Like, we definitely have kids that, like, that's been a struggle for them. But the thing is like, if we take our, you know, we in terms of people on our team, we know who those few guys are. And probably our guy that has sadly been the most injury prone is probably the best athlete on our team. And, you know, even though things happen, you know, he's sadly injured right now, but 2 weeks ago when before he hurt himself, I think he ran one of the fastest times in the history of the school in the 100 meter dash. I mean, Coach Doyle has definitely found a way that works for a lot of people. You know, even if, like, even for those kids that are injured, he just, like, finds a way to keep them active and safe and healthy, but, like, progressing still, you know, finding what it is that they can do in order to make sure that down the road they can still be there with the rest of us. Because it's hard to take a lot of time off and then just try to, like, reintegrate yourself in this kind of sport. It's just not, it's simply not possible. You know, if you can't train things like your nervous system and, you know, a lot of, you know, muscular systems in your body, it's just impossible to keep up if you're injured. But he finds a way to keep kids going for sure.
That's very interesting. And I mean, like, the amount of talent that's responded to his coaching philosophy seems to be quite evident as well, because it seems that every year there's just more and more guys that are coming to compete, that there doesn't seem to be much of a drop off where you're talking about, you got a bunch of guys that are graduating that are at the top of their game, but you're bringing in a class of freshmen that really aren't that far behind them.
Yeah.
And if they are, they're quickly up to pace and they're able to start contributing from a very early age, yeah, respectively. And so it just seems that there's that sort of aspect of as well for Coach Doyle and Coach Bartzell in terms of just their ability to recruit. Because sort of one of the next things I wanted to talk about is just, like, kind of ties into that underappreciated factor with, like, the finances and the revenue and stuff is scholarships.
Yeah.
And because the scholarship system at URI and at any mid-major school, this is not specific to URI, is interesting, because when you think of college sports and you think of going to run or going to play football or whatever, and you think of going to play at a big school, when you think of the Power Five schools, majority of those guys are on scholarship, and full, whether it's a full scholarship or a majority scholarship, whatever. But when you go to mid-major schools, ones that are smaller, that compete at high levels but aren't, like, at the upper echelon of the athletic pyramid, a lot of these teams are made up of guys that are not on scholarship.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were talking about this before. I mean, to your knowledge, how many guys on the men's track and field team are on scholarship? Like, do you have any clue?
I think it's a good healthy amount that are on scholarship, but in terms of people that, you know, don't have to pay for school, it's very few. And I think that's, like, what we were talking about before the show, is I think people look at college athletics and they either think that everybody's on, like, they're just not paying for school, or they're getting special treatment, money in their pockets. They think that if you say you're on scholarship, they automatically think that that means you're, like, fully covered. When in reality, like, these days, especially with COVID, we have a lot of people doing fifth years, things like that. You know, me included, I'm coming back next year to do a fifth year. Chris Tavarone is too, things like that. Those people tend to get a lot of money because they kind of have to take care of you to kind of make that sacrifice to come back and help the program. But outside of that, like, if you're a freshman and you're getting any money, like, it kind of seems like you just have to be thankful. Like, me specifically, like, I told you, I was a walk-on, and then I went to my first Atlantic 10 championships, and I had to run 4 or 5 times. Like, it's a lot of money to I'm missing out on competing at a high level. Obviously, I was happy to do it, and I was, like, over the moon when I got a scholarship. But, you know, it's few and far between that kids are fully taken care of. You know, you look around the country and you look at other schools, like, saw a video recently of the University of Florida football facility.
Oh,
there was
God,
a parking lot full of Hellcats. My Nissan Rogue is not a Hellcat. Like, I'm not getting a car from the University of Rhode Island for running track and field. Maybe some kids are at other schools, but, you know, that kind of thing just doesn't happen here. So I think our team is just, again, a testament to them not telling kids no and really, like, turning kids into who they want to be and then, you know, paying it off down the line.
I think that's going to be the interesting thing that comes out of this grant as well, because I feel like that you could say that track and field is going to be one of the teams that benefits the most from these renovations, just considering the fact that they're completely building a brand new outdoor facility and upgrading the indoor one. So you're talking about the facilities drastically improving as well, but then that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine that eventually some of it will trickle down in order to get more scholarships to you guys. And then you were also, you mentioned this as well, which is another thing that I feel like a lot of people don't really realize, is that Title IX plays a big factor into this as well. And when we saw the women's varsity program for lacrosse get added, that's a big deal because that levels the playing field in a sense, because now in the basis of Title IX, to put it in layman's terms, you need to have an equal amount of men's and women's scholarship athletes at competing at a given time. That's how it is. It's a federal law across the country. Schools around the country have found ways to get out of it through whether it's they pull students or they just find ways to circumvent it somehow. But you run the risk of losing federal funding if you're not in compliance with Title IX. A number of schools haven't been in compliance with Title IX. I know URI has been not in compliance with Title IX at some points, at just like every other university. But the addition of the women's lacrosse program is a big deal because that adds more women's athletes to the scholarship total. Mm-hmm. And so that means you can start issuing more scholarships to men's players.
Yeah.
And that it's either... that can either then be recognizing players like yourself and guys that have walked on that have really gotten their hands dirty and really tried and put in an exceptional amount of work to get to this point, or it's that allows you or allows programs like the men's track and field team to start looking at a higher echelon of talent to where you can start getting guys that you can see from freshman year possibly competing at New England's or other super regionals or even competing at the higher NCAA level.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's another thing that a lot of programs will be eagerly waiting to see over the next few years as this money starts to get put into certain projects, because obviously the changes and the effects of those changes are going to come down the line and you're not going to see them immediately, but it's all going to be a gradual process to help see programs like the men's track and field team, women's track and field team, men's and women's soccer, baseball, softball, these teams that are competitive really break through a glass ceiling, so to speak, and put themselves on a pedestal where they're garnering as much attention as basketball or garnering as much attention as football. And I feel like that combined with players like yourself and the success that your team in particular has been able to produce are just going to expedite that process even more.
Yeah, I think a lot of your points, like, they lead to the thought that I have about us is that we're very sustainable. Like, having guys that don't, you know, get a ton of, you know, monetary reciprocation, but still perform very well. And, you know, our continued success through our circumstances, you know, makes me very confident that even in the next, you know, maybe 7 to 10 years, whatever it is, maybe less until we have proper facilities taken care of, you know, maybe boost in funding, whatever that is, to maybe see higher levels of talent and, you know, better working conditions for us. I think that we'll get to that point just fine. And then I think that hopefully in that era of our team, when I'm gone, I can see a lot of kids flourish in the future.
And so that was kind of one of the other things I wanted to talk about with you is that having been a part of this program for so long, you've seen how this staff and this program develops talent. You're a prime example of that. And so I'm curious as to where you think this program is going and the direction that it's going. I mean, because it's obvious that this team is successful, and it's successful in their conference and successful in New England, but we haven't seen much success beyond that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, to me at least, it seems like it's only a matter of time before that success comes and we start to see guys from URI or girls from URI competing on the national stage, whether it's competing at NCAAs, competing at Olympic trials, competing at super regionals and stuff like that. So, I mean, just from your perspective now, and whether it's 2, 3, 10 years down the line, if stuff continues to grow as it has since you've been here, where do you think that this program is going to end up?
I think our program has a very high ceiling. Like, I can say that from my first year here to now, like, the discussions around goals is totally different. Like, my freshman year, I think we sent maybe, I think, 4 guys to the outdoor regional championship to try to make NCAAs. and I think that number, you know, keeps climbing, and I think the potential number each year at the start of each season is also climbing. Like we talked about in the beginning of the year, like it's very realistic that within the next year or two, like we could be sending double digit guys to those meets, and I find it hard to believe that we could send that many people there and nobody makes it through to NCAAs. I think that that's definitely something that can start to happen in the near future, because we also seem to be putting guys in that in those meets earlier on in their careers compared to where we were before. You know, when I was a freshman, I think our only guy on the track that made it, he made it as a fifth year. But in these past few years, we've had kids pretty close to the standards as sophomores. So I think that's definitely a testament to our readiness and, you know, the effectiveness of our coaching and recruiting in recent years. And I think if that, you know, stays at its level, if not, you know, keeps improving, I definitely think that the sky's the limit and we could start seeing people from URI at the NCAA championships pretty soon.
That's awesome. And so then now, as we kind of round out the show, I want to think more short term.
Mm-hmm.
This season, this spring season, and then since you're coming back for the fifth year, which I didn't know, I'm mm-hmm. super stoked yeah. to hear that you're coming back and that Chris is coming back, because that's got to go for the 5-peat.
Yeah, exactly.
You got
yeah.
four, you got to go for five.
Yeah.
I'm more curious that what should be fan expectations for this season, for this spring, and then for indoor and outdoor the following year?
Yeah.
And from your position, what's a message that you can give to fans to get more people to look at this team? Because I know the eyes that are on this program are growing every day, but just as a position of leadership on this program, what's a message that you can give to fans of URI Athletics to be like, hey, pay attention to us as well?
Yeah, starting with, you know, people from the outside looking in, if they're maybe interested in our program, I think it's important to just look at the sport as a whole. I think track's pretty underrepresented. I think if you just go online and you look into kind of the preparation and the training of a lot of college athletes in our sports, you'll realize how vigorous and how hard it really is. I mean, you know, we don't really train skills. Like, we have to, you know, really train our bodies and put in a lot of long hours and tough effort. You know, it's really hard to be able to sustain it for 5 years. I mean, so I think people just need to find what they like about the sport. I mean, there's so many different things. Like, you could like throwing, jumping, you know, distance running is, you know, very common with casual fans, because, I mean, plenty of people just go out for a run. But, you know, there's so many great athletes in the sport that, like, if you're just interested in sports and you want to see, you know, peak athleticism, you should be looking into track and field. And with how good our program is getting, I think it could be really exciting to, you know, keep an eye on us and just kind of see if we can progress into that kind of territory and status of those elite athletes. Because I know we have some guys that have that potential. And I think that being here and supporting us now before some kids do some really great things and go on to become, you know, hopefully world-class athletes, it'd be really great to garner that support around here. And, you know, that always helps, you know, young kids look at URI and, you know, keep that sustainability of the program that we were talking about going. You know, any kid can come to URI if they want enough and become one of those potential world-class people. I mean, it's just one of those sports. But in terms of our goals for the next year and a half or so, like I said, we definitely want to send more people to the NCAA regional. I think our relay teams have a lot of potential. Our sprint squad is super deep. We can, you know, field great 4x100 and 4x400s for the outdoor season. Send some guys individually, the throws, the jumps, distance guys. We've got a lot of successful people, so we want to definitely have, you know, a packed flight going down to Kentucky this year, going to the East Regional. Obviously, we want to win outdoor A-10s. That's always, you know, on the top of our list. For me, I still don't have an Atlanta 10 gold medal. I've got plenty of silvers and bronzes, so hopefully this outdoor season, 100, 200, 4x1, whatever it is, can bring that gold. I know a lot of guys have that same goal in their events. Go to the New England Championships, do our thing there too. That doesn't really change. And then next year, I mean, you know, we always want to win. I think we enjoy doing it in different ways, though. I think, you know, we want to go places, we want to run against different people, things like that. You know, just keep on upping the standard, more school records, more, you know, all-time top 10 marks, things like that. Keep growing as a family, bring in some new guys that can, you know, help us out in those regards, and, you know, keep growing our family and things like that.
Awesome. Well, I'm thoroughly impressed with everything that I've heard, and I'm very much excited to continue following you guys. And it's, again, a program that I knew nothing about when I came here, and since then I have had the pleasure of going to see you guys at the Indoor Atlantic 10 Championships last year, and I've just kept up with all of the a lot of your meets, and I'm just thoroughly impressed with the job that your program has done to establish itself as a juggernaut on campus. And it's just so cool, and I really think that you may as well be a shoo-in for outdoors this year with the momentum that you guys carry and just with the talent that's at your disposal. I feel like that it's just a matter of time before you start seeing program win records start to accumulate as well. I mean, they're probably already there, but it's just the amount of success that you guys have, I can't see it stopping anytime soon. So I'm thoroughly impressed by that. But I mean, Liam, thank you so much for joining me today. This was fantastic. So informative. I'm hoping that anybody listening was able to learn more about this program, because, I mean, like I said, it's one of the most underappreciated programs on campus, and I feel like that it deserves so much more attention than it gets. And I feel like that it's only a matter of time. Once more eyes start getting onto the smaller side of athletics, you're going to start to see so much more attention go to this program, and it just rightfully so. You guys win everything. All you do is win constantly, and so it's about time that people start to back that up with a little bit more attention your way. But I mean, Liam, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody at home, thank you all for listening. Like I said, hope you learned something, and we will be back next week. I recorded an episode with the captain of the URI baseball team, Anthony DiPino, so you guys will be hearing that live next Wednesday, 1 to 2 on WRIU 90.3 FM Kingston. And until then, I will see you all in the next one.